grow herbs for beginners. So these are some of the easiest medicinal herbs to grow, and they have a wide variety of uses. We're going to start with the Monarda genus. So this encompasses bee balm and wild bergamot. It's also sometimes called Oswego tea. So wherever you live and grow, there's a Monarda for you. So depending on the species or the variety, they grow in many different habitats and soil types. So bee balm is native to North America, and it's a really important medicine and culinary herb for indigenous folks throughout the continent. And everything that we know about the herb comes from native uses of the plant, everything that the European herbalists have incorporated into their materia medica and the descendants of colonists. Bee balm or wild bergamot is wonderful for drawing in pollinators, bees, butterflies, hummingbird moths. I used to have a huge patch of wild bergamot growing with echinacea. They bloom at the same time. They are smashing together, so pretty. And that patch was just alight with all different kinds of pollinators. So bee balm is one of my favorite medicinal herbs for colds and flu and fever. It helps to break up respiratory congestion, so it helps to alleviate congestion in the sinuses, and it also helps to stimulate mucus secretion from the lungs. So if you've got a really thick phlegm in a respiratory infection, it will help to expectorate that. It's a gentle nervine sedative, and it's a beverage tea in line with herbs like chamomile and linden and mint. So Monarda fistulosa thrives in drier soils, whereas Monarda didyma prefers moist, rich soils. And Monarda didyma comes in a variety of reds and purples and pinks, whereas Monarda fistulosa is a pale lavender to white color. The bee balms spread by runners and are most easily grown from a little piece of the runner or from a division of the roots. You can grow them from seed, but you'll want to make sure that you surface sow the seed because it's so teeny. Bee balm is a classic mainstay in the herb garden, and I hope you find a bee balm that is meant for you. Here we have Spilanthes, which is also called toothache plant or paracress. Some people call it eyeball plant from the flower head's resemblance to an eyeball, or they call it eyeball plant. So Spilanthes is a spreading ground cover, really succulent, and I plant it underneath taller herbs like hibiscus or tulsi or holy basil. And Spilanthes is one of the herbs that I use most commonly. It is a lovely immune stimulant, and it's also antimicrobial, antioxidant. It's one that you can use when you're gonna go on a plane or go to a party or just in a place where you could potentially encounter pathogens or germs. This makes a really nice tincture. So I like to use the leaves, the stems, and the flower in the tincture. You can also use it in tea form. And just like a couple dropperfuls, it's very similar to echinacea in its medicinal uses. It's got the same tingle and salivatory experience in the mouth from a shared constituent with echinacea called alkamides. So Spilanthes is also a xylagogue, which is what herbalists call saliva promoting, any herb that's saliva promoting. So Spilanthes does like moist and richer soils, and it does spread a bit. 1 to 2 plants is really all you'll need as a home gardener. It thrives in containers, and it's a lovely plant to get to know. Yarrow is another mainstay in the herb garden. It's a great companion plant. These teeny individual flower heads attract a slew of beneficial insects into the garden, and the leaves and the flower are medicinal. So the leaves are one of our best herbs for staunching bleeding, and it really works. I've seen it in action many times. So it's a wonderful herb for cuts and wounds and bruises topically, and internally we use it as a decongestant for allergies and colds and flu, and it also is wonderful for breaking a fever. So I'll combine it with ginger and elderflower to help break a fever and colds and flu. It's got a lovely fragrance, and it is a spreading ground cover, so you'll want to control its growth by putting if you have like a small area and you want to contain it, you put like a barrier that goes into the soil. They're sold as rhizome barriers, or grow it in a container, or grow it in an out of the way area where it can just do its thing. Likewise, bee balm also spreads copiously by runners, so you might have to control some of its exuberance as well. And yarrow is one that you can make a tea out of or a tincture. It's quite bitter in flavor, so it's not really a beverage tea because it has such a strong flavor. Now, with all of these herbs that I'm covering, they have potential side effects and also situations where you wouldn't want to use them, like pregnancy. For instance, yarrow is an emmenagogue, so that's an herb that stimulates the menses. So we don't want to use it in pregnancy. So this is anise hyssop or licorice mint. It's neither an anise nor a hyssop. So this is a great example of how common names can be a little misleading. It has the scent of anise, and it has purple flowers like hyssop, but it doesn't have the same uses as those herbs. It's also called licorice mint. We use the leaves and the flowers for medicine and also as a culinary herbs. This plant is native to North America, and it's a traditional herb for medicine and flavoring by many of the indigenous peoples of what are now called the Prairie States. So the Cheyenne, Dakota, and Pawnee all use it for medicine, and also many other peoples. So this is one of my favorites to plant in containers and also along front walkways. It's just so pretty, and it attracts so many butterflies and bees. It's just really a pollinator magnet and super fragrant. So the leaves and flower make a nice tea. They can also be infused into honey, into syrups and oxymels, which is like a honey vinegar concoction. And anise hyssop is a wonderful herb for digestion, so it helps alleviate intestinal gas. It's also a great remedy for colds and flu, and you can also use it in your cooking. You can sprinkle the little individual flowers into your salads or onto sweets, and then you can infuse the leaves into cream or butter or non-dairy alternatives, and then bake with those products, and it will impart a lovely anisey flavor to your baked goods. So anise hyssop is really easy to grow, and it grows in most garden soils, and you can get 2 to 3 harvests from the plant. If you pinch it back when it's first growing in the early summer and also the spring, it will become more bushy and put out more flowers. So when I'm pinching back my basil, I'll go and pinch my anise hyssop back, and the plants really become more lush and have more flowers. So I'm holding here a bouquet of prickly pear. So you might not think of this cactus as an herb, but it's a wonderful medicinal plant to grow. And you can grow it even if you don't live in an arid climate. So I've been growing this plant for 15 years. And in our humid and hot climate of North Carolina here in the Southern Appalachians. So this is another plant that has a really strong history of use and also contemporary use by the indigenous peoples of the Southwest and down into what is now Mexico. It's a food herb. It's one that we can consume quite a bit of. And both the fruit and these pads, what we call the pads, are edible. So prickly pear is a wonderful medicine for the cardiovascular system. So it helps to lower LDL cholesterol and triglycerides. And it is also a very traditional remedy for diabetes. So it helps to lower blood sugar, and it's taken tonically with type 2 diabetes to help moderate blood sugar levels. The fruit is very high in antioxidants. So it's one of the best fruits for helping to prevent cardiovascular disease and cancer. And it just keeps our cells perky and lessens inflammation in the body. And the fruit you can eat as jam, chutney, syrup, fresh prickly pear. A lot of people might know of prickly pear from prickly pear margaritas, which are sort of a specialty cocktail of the Southwest. And the fruit turns this beautiful fuchsia color from some of the flavonoids that are in the fruit. So really easy to grow. It likes well-drained soil. So I will add, in our area, we have really clay soils. So I add a lot of sand and sometimes like pea gravel to the soil that I planted in. This variety here is a spineless variety. So it doesn't have any spines, but it does have these little teeny hairs around these little parts of the pad. So that's why I'm holding it with this cloth. But those little hairs, if you bring it into the kitchen and you just give it a little scrub, they just rinse right off. I really recommend a spineless variety if you're going to grow it. It's much easier when you're harvesting and processing it, and also less likely to have tussles with people coming into your landscape. You can prepare it into salsas, you can pickle the pads, you can add it to eggs. There's so many different ways that you can enjoy the pads. They have a little bit of a sour flavor and also quite a bit of mucilage or slime, which is the soluble fiber, and that's a big part of the medicine. Now, this variety is not very cold hardy, and so where I live, I bring it in the winter. So I will dig up a whole plant, put it in a pot, and put it in the sunniest spot of my house. And in that way, I have overwintered it for more than a decade. Likewise, you can break off pads at their base and put them in a basket in a dark, cool place for the winter and root them again come spring. They just survive fine in a basket for 7 months. It's incredible, even longer. So this is a really tenacious, tough plant with many medicinal qualities. So I hope you try your hand with some of these lovely botanicals in your own garden.